Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. I am your host, Richard, and I will be with you throughout this journey. This show is here to empower individuals to do more in life professionally. You will find a variety of topics that will help you to be more productive and more successful. So join me and the professionals from different industries as we bring education and knowledge for more success.
Hi, everybody. My name is Richard Esperance, and I go by the name of my man, Richard. Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. Today, we're going to talk about the stock market. So we're going to do a review of 2023 and talk about the whole market in general. So I have my stock guy with me, Stuart Cruz. So he's a regular now on the podcast. So I'm very happy that he's here. And we had some little issue before, but it's okay. So we made it. I think you guys are going to like this episode. So Stuart, just tell the people a little bit about yourself and we'll get started.
Yeah, sure. I'm Stuart Cruz. We run Cruz Asset Management. It's a boutique asset management firm that specializes in using math and statistics to make investment decisions for our clients. We also have a virtual family office. And if you're not familiar with the family office concept, a family office was arguably or thought to have been started by the Rockefellers. So it's a family with so much money that they hire a team of financial professionals to look after their assets and coordinate, you know, their moves. Now, most people don't have the kind of wealth that requires to hire a team of professionals, but a lot of people need some of those services some of the time. So we form a virtual family office for particular opportunities. And so we'll work with our client's CPA and other experts on an as-needed basis and bring them in as a team as opposed to referring people out. So everybody's working together as a unit in benefit or hopefully in benefit for our clients so that they kind of have a virtual family office for when they need it without the payroll when they don't need it.
All right. So like I said, we're going to do a little bit of review of 2023 and see what's going to happen in 2024. So what's your overall say for 2023 for the market?
Well, it was a very interesting market and not as productive for probably most people as what the headlines would indicate. So the stock market has been pretty much, we're going to call it up all year, but it's been a very narrow range of stocks. And, you know, they used to call it the, you just work on like the Facebook and the Amazons and the Google names. And now you start adding because of AI is basically been the driving force of the up part of the market. They were calling it the Magnificent Seven. So you add NVIDIA in there and Microsoft, but a very, very narrow version of the stock market has done really well. And the rest of the stock market has lagged. So throughout most of 23, most sectors and indices have been modestly up, but the market, because it's overweighted to technology and technology sector has been overweighted to these handful of what people are calling the Magnificent Seven stocks, have done really well. So if you had an index fund, you did pretty good. If you were buying individual stocks and if you bought those very specific seven stocks, you've done pretty well. But the market itself, on a broad-based look, has done very lackluster, very average.
So who would you say would be the big winners and the big losers?
Well, big winner was a company called NVIDIA. So NVIDIA makes 90 to 95% of all the chips that go into the artificial intelligence computers. So they pretty much have a lockhold or stranglehold on that marketplace. And so that stock went up several X over the last year. The problem with NVIDIA, though, is a stock company is an awesome company. So the question is the company a great company? That answer is undoubtedly yes. Is it a great investment? Well, that's a whole different question, because NVIDIA, prior to this AI revolution and the kind of release of ChatGPT a year ago, and it's kind of taken the market by storm, NVIDIA was trading at a multiple of 2x sales. So 2x its top line revenue, which is about an average number for most S&P companies to be trading at. So if a company is trading at a, making a certain number of sales, you divide it by the number of shares that the company has outstanding, and that price would be twice that number. That's what 2x sales really means. So NVIDIA went from trading at 2x sales to 44x sales. Now that's a gargantuan number. That would mean, in order for NVIDIA to grow in to its current number, it would have to 20x its revenue, 20x its top line revenue. And it's a $1 trillion company, around that $1 trillion company now. So it would have to become a $20 trillion top line revenue company. It just, and it's not even a service company or a software company where it can just send out a bunch of ones and zeros electronically. It makes a manufactured product, a hardcore chip that needs to be built and made and shipped. So imagine 20xing any manufacturing process is a mind-boggling task for any company, especially one that's already been successful and established like NVIDIA. So it's going to be a challenge for it to grow into that valuation.
And what about some losers in this year? Maybe stocks that we thought that were going to do good, but they went the opposite.
Yeah, losers in this year. There's a long list of losers. I don't even know where to begin on that, because a lot of these stocks really, they took off because of COVID, right? And then once COVID started to unwind, they saw weakness in 21, 22, and now 23, they're bottoming out. So there's a whole long list of like Peloton and Chewy and PayPal. And, there's a lot of stocks that really got taken to the woodshed. Now, maybe they've bottomed out right now and they've hit their bottom and they might be good stocks for the future, like PayPal or Affirm, which are payment systems. The numbers were out for the Black Friday and Cyber Monday numbers, and they're, I want to say, 7 or 8% ahead of the best all-time numbers. So people are buying in droves, but they are using a buy now, pay later strategy using PayPal and companies like Affirm, and that has increased by almost 50%. So some of the analysts are looking like, well, now might be a really good time since these stocks have gotten crushed. Now might be a really good time to get into some of those names because the way people are paying for things have shifted quite a bit. Now that could pose a problem in the future because we're going to talk about 2024. We had a massive amount of excessive savings rate built up due to COVID. So people were at home, they were getting stimulus checks, and the excess savings rate really maximized in 2021 and has been working itself down and working itself off almost to zero or flat to kind of right around now. So we're running out of all that excessive savings that people have been spending. And that is coupled with the fact that what I just said was now people are saying, hey, I can't really pay for these things now, so I'm going to pay for them later because I'm out of savings. And the retail debt, credit card debt, has hit over $1 trillion, $1.08 trillion now for the first time, over $1 trillion. And default rates on credit card debt and other areas of debt are increasing to above a 10-year high. Or not 10-year high, but above the 10-year average. So all of these things wrapped together spell for possibly a future quarter of, a pullback in the economy. People are putting off their payments. They're running out of cash. They're not able to pay their credit cards and their debts. And they're taking on massive amounts more credit card debt than they've ever taken on before. all the while, interest rates are higher than they've ever been in the last, you know, multiple decades. So none of that is good news for the economy moving forward.
How much is the interest rate by you guys? Because us in, I'm in Canada, I believe it's 5%. What's the interest rate by you guys?
Are you talking about the mortgage rate or are you talking about the 10-year rate? So our mortgage rates are hovering around 7% right now, if that's what you're talking about, the 30-year mortgage. Our 10-year treasury has gone from 5 down to like 4.3. And the yield curve that was steeply inverted, we had the yield curve being the difference between the 10-year treasury rate and the 2-year treasury rate. And normally, if you're giving your money to the government for 2 years, you get paid less than if you give them to the government for 10 years because it's locked up for longer. So you normally expect a higher rate of return. For the last more than a year and a half, that rate has been inverted. So the 2-year has been much higher than the 10-year and is inverted more than it's ever been in the United States since the late 80s. Now, why do we care about that? Well, what that suggests is that if the 2-year is higher than the 10, that would mean that we're kind of predicting the 2-year is going to drop precipitously. And normally the only time that happens is when the economy tanks. So it would suggest that the 2-year is really going to fall. And when you look at that inversion, we have never had a recession without an inversion. And every time since the late 80s, we've had an inversion, we've had a recession. So it's not a guaranteed lock, but it's a pretty darn good indicator of whether a recession's coming or not. And we've had a deepest inversion that we've ever had in the last 40 plus years. So again, another thing that doesn't bode well for the future of the economy.
When is the next rate in February?
That's actually a good question. Actually, I do not know the answer to that. I think they just had a Fed meeting not too long ago. So that sounds about right. It's February.
Yeah,
I think they had a Fed meeting about a week ago. There are some Fed governors that still think that we need to raise interest rates. It feels like consensus from the economists that interest rates for the Fed have kind of peaked, but there are some Fed governors that say, you know, the inflation rate is still sticky, and we still need to raise interest rates in spite of some potential weakness in the economy. So again, that's another indicator that we're going to make it just a notch harder for the economic activity to flow, and that you're going to end up with a decline in the market velocity, or the money moving through the economy, the velocity of the cash through the economy, which again is bad for the economy.
You were talking before about the Magnificent Seven. For people who don't know, these are, could you explain to the people? Because we know we have Facebook, Google, and all that. So
what are they? I'm probably going to miss them. Facebook, Google, Amazon, like it's NVIDIA now, Microsoft, Apple, of course. Missing one. I knew I was going to miss one. Somewhere in there. So they're trying to, except what's the other?
Yeah, you said NVIDIA, yeah?
Yeah, I said NVIDIA. So right. We got 6 of 7. But yeah, mostly these tech stocks, and I won't call them high flyers, except for NVIDIA is pretty high flyer right now. These are great companies. They're making money. They're driving economic expansion. They are driving economic ingenuity, and, you know, they're wonderful companies. The question is, can they have multiple expansion from here? And that's to be determined. And history would suggest that once you go through these multiple expansion periods at higher rates of interest, you should have actually multiple contraction. So my guess is you're going to get a chance to buy these stocks at a discount, or at least at a fair value in the next quarter or two.
Do you see in the future a AI bubble like the .com?
I think we're a ways away from a bubble yet. There's definitely been some hype around it, and I think in a lot of ways deservedly so. Like this is I lived through the internet bubble, right? It's actually when I got my desk at Lehman Brothers, it was in the late 90s. And so I was involved with this and got to see it, you know, up close in the marketplace. at that time, I mean, people were, there were dozens, if not hundreds of companies that were selling at ridiculous prices that were making no money at all. And there was no real innovation. Like, it was, the joke was like literally mailbox.com would sell for $10 million or, you know, now like pets.com at the time had no business model. And now there's a business model to make money. But at the time, you just put a .com at the end of something and you owned a web page. You just owned the web page, the domain. It was worth millions. And that's crazy. Like, how many eyeballs can I, it didn't matter about, am I actually doing anything to increase the consumer's benefit? Well, that's not what we have here at all. Like, OpenAI and ChatGPT and all the internet tools that have come out with AI, these things are actually increasing productivity consistently. So they are helping. Now, there are definitely some examples of companies that are paid up for some of these companies and acquisitions, but I certainly wouldn't call it a bubble, because you'd have to name, like, there'd have to be 50 companies out there that are just branded, you know, AI, and everybody's just buying them just because they have an AI attached to their name with blinders on. And that's not what's happening at all right now. So I wouldn't say we're in a bubble, but there are definitely some frothy stocks out there.
Are you implementing AI in your world, and how do you see it in the financial services?
We are. I do it all the time to get ideas. It's not from my understanding, and I've done some research in this area, and I know enough about AI and have written code in machine learning and stuff to be dangerous. And you may or may not know, I have an engineering background, so it actually, I enjoy writing code from time to time to learn about how this stuff works. And certainly not an expert by any stretch, but it gives me a little bit of an insight. From the financial standpoint and managing money itself, it hasn't provided a huge advantage yet. And in my opinion, the people that work with, let's say, financial advisors or people like yourself, they want information from people. They want to talk to a person about a very specific thing. And let's say ChatGPT has no ability to really, you know, they only are trained through a certain amount of data. They can't really talk about current events, can't really give anybody any real information yet that's useful in the here and now. And again, I think most people would prefer to talk to somebody that they know and trust. So as far as the services, I'm not super concerned that will be replaced yet. I mean, who knows? I do think people tend to like to talk to people in general. So I am hopeful that I will still have a job in the next coming years. But using it for other things, like generating ideas about current content, or you know, being creative on, hey, I'm going to write a blog article that might be useful to people. How do I get that information out? It increases productivity that way. So, for example, I've been asked to write a foreword of somebody's book. One of my contemporaries who sells insurance and annuities and does planning on that side. I don't do any of that work. I do more quantitative asset management with stocks and bonds. So he asked me to write a foreword for his book. The first thing I thought of was I should use AI to incorporate a skeleton of what that might look like first. So instead of me sitting down saying, oh my God, how am I going to write this foreword? I can go ahead and say ChatGPT or copy AI. Here's the parameters of the foreword that he gave me. Write a foreword for this particular person. And then it will give me, you know, well, let's say it's 10-80-10. So I put 10% of the work in for the asking the question. It does 80% of the work. And then I do the back 10% to put my flair on it. But that's 80% of the work I didn't have to do. And I still have a personalized version of a foreword for this person's book that I've created that's probably better written than I would have started, you know, to do myself. So it does help with productivity quite a bit in the right areas.
How is a Q4 for the moment, at the moment?
Well, Q4 tends to be pretty strong. Interest rates have been coming down recently, so that is a double-edged sword, right? If interest rates are coming down, that tends to help the economy. But that tends to signal weakness in the economy. And so there's a study that says, it's super interesting because we're right on this precipice. At around 4.5%, which is exactly where we're at right now, if you're below 4.5%, then interest rates coming down tends to be counter to, what's the word? It tends to be opposite effect of the stock market. So the interest rates go down, the stock market goes up. So if you're over that 4.5% to like 6%, when interest rates go down, the stock market goes down, and interest rates go up, the stock market goes up. So correlation was the word I was looking for. So it tends to be negatively correlated on one side and positively correlated on the other side. So right now we're literally right on the bubble of which side it's going to fall on. So it's a little bit up in the air of what's going to happen. I think, again, I'm in the we're not out of the recession camp just quite yet. I think we're going to see a recession. So my guess would be that if, as interest rates are coming down, this is the initial signal that the economy is starting to get weaker. That's what we had anticipated with this inverted yield curve, that interest rates will start to come down. People have projected that interest rates are going to come down. The Fed will start lowering interest rates. The only time the Fed has started to lower interest rates has been before we've entered into a recession. It's the reason why the Fed is lowering interest rates, because they see the recession coming and they're trying to stave it off. So I actually don't see how you don't get a recession and call for lower interest rates. Because normally, if you think the economy is normally strong, you keep interest rates as is, or you raise them. You certainly don't drop them if you're in a strong economy. So calling for lower interest rates, which is what we've actually seen and what the economists are suggesting are going to happen in Q1, and saying there's not going to be a recession, I think are counter to each other's calls. But that's why they're saying, hey, are we going to thread the needle? Are we going to get a soft landing? And is it going to be like the, you know, Goldilocks kind of thing just right? I think it's impossible, not impossible. It's improbable for the Fed to be just right, right? Because they are dealing with data that is 3 to 6 months old, arguably, when they get it. And then anything that they do in the economy doesn't work its way into the economy for at least 9 months. So my analogy there is, let's say you're driving a car and you're going down a straight road. Okay, fantastic. I can drive a car and go down a straight road. That's great. Well, what if I put a screen over the windshield and then I just gave you a delayed picture that didn't come in for 3 seconds? Well, I could probably still pretty much drive down, I'd slow down, but I'd probably still be able to drive down the road. Now, when I turn the steering wheel or hit the brake, nothing happens for 9 seconds. Okay, now I really have to be cautious. But again, if it's a straight road, I could probably figure it out. If there's any kind of bend or curve in the road, you're going to crash your car. And the economy always has bends or curves in the road. And so I think there's no way the Fed is not going to be able to crash the car. They've always crashed the car. They're doing the best they can with the information that they have. I just don't think it's probable that they're going to be able to anticipate that there's a curve in the road that they can't see, or what, maybe it curves and curves back to the other way. Like, who knows? So that's where I'm at.
We were talking, we keep hearing about soft landing. Yeah. For people who don't know, when they talk about that, they probably listen to the stock market and they hear that soft landing. Could you explain to the people what they're talking about?
Yeah, so a soft landing is the Fed perfectly driving the car down this curved road with the delayed signals that they have and the delayed response and not crashing the economy. And what that means to them is, we had to fight inflation. So the Fed had to raise interest rates in order to fight inflation. Their mandate, at least in the United States, they have two mandates that are somewhat competing: keeping interest rates low and also keeping unemployment low. Now, low unemployment tends to increase inflation. So those two mandates compete with each other. So we have to kind of find an equilibrium to some extent. Now, inflation went up. So they are trying to raise their interest rates above the two-year treasury because they've never been able to successfully fight inflation with the Fed rate below the two-year. They have to get it above the two-year. That's why they keep raising the rates so that it gets above the two-year and they fight off the built-up inflation in the system. All right, so the soft landing comes in this. We have inflation. The Fed raises interest rates, and they're trying to push it down. Well, as they push interest rates down, that slows the economy down. Well, slowing the economy down is good to some extent, because if you have it too fast, then it overheats and keeps inflation in place. Now, they want to slow it down just enough, but not too much, so that they battle inflation, but don't cause a recession or deflation. So we were facing deflation during the financial crisis. And that was when Bernanke was in power and he was studying the Great Depression. And that was what happened during the Great Depression, was it was deflationary. And deflation is really hard to get out of. The only way we got out of deflation back in the 30s was because of World War I. That was the only way we got out of it. All the economic games that the Federal Reserve and the companies were playing at that time didn't get us out of the Great Depression. It was a world war, and all the stimulus that was caused by the war that caused us to get out of the depression. So you have a deflationary spiral. That is like the scariest thing economists are afraid of. So we want some inflation, so it's not deflation. We want some inflation, but not too much. Okay, so we don't want a recession. We don't want a deflation that could cause a depression. We want some inflation, but not too much. So the soft landing is, I am going to raise interest rates enough to drive them down enough so that I can stop raising interest rates, so that I stop at a perfect kind of 2% inflation rate, and it doesn't cause the economy to go into a recession. That needle to thread is, in my opinion, unbearably small. And I might even suggest, and I was saying that you're trying to thread that needle, I would suggest that there's not even an aisle in that needle to thread. Like, it's a steel bar. I think we're going to have a recession, in my opinion. But I guess there's probably a way that they can do it. And if they do it, in my opinion, it's going to be somewhat lucky because of the delayed data that they get and the delayed reaction time that they have in order to make the changes that they do.
We have the Santa Claus rally that's coming soon. So talk to us about that.
Well, that actually looks pretty in place. And December is traditionally a very strong month and usually preceded by the Black Friday numbers and the Cyber Monday numbers, which were very strong. As I said, up like 7.8%. So all the numbers were fantastic. Would look like the consumer's in a reasonably good place to spend. The question is, are they delaying all their spending? And the answer is they are, because they're doing buy now, pay later strategies, much more than they ever have in the past, to some other quarter. So they're kind of delaying all the problems. They're kicking the can down the road. So that would indicate, hey, if the consumer's in place, we're going to be buying leading up into Christmas. And quite frankly, the Thanksgiving travel season here in the United States was one of the strongest we've ever seen as well. So people were flying around. There was no problem. A lot of this is attributed to kind of built up COVID as well. Like, people had canceled all their plans for COVID. For instance, my family went down to Universal Studios in Florida. A lot of people weren't able to do that. So during COVID, nobody was able to do that during COVID. So there's a lot of backed up demand of people going to these places. And believe me, these places are charging some very high prices for, whatever they're selling you, water. There's a commercial right now in the United States, like, you're going to charge for water. Well, $6 for a bottle of water, and everything is pricey. And so these companies are making money because of inflation, and they're able to get these prices. But at some point, if the recession hits and wages aren't keeping up pace, and inflation is still, so inflation, while it's coming down, this is a point that a lot of people don't realize. They're like, hey, everything is more expensive because of inflation, and we need to get that number down. Well, that's 100% right. But if you had something that cost let's say $100 and you had 10% inflation and it went to 110 and now you only have 5% inflation, well, it still goes from 110 to, let's say, what's that, 115 and a half. So even though the inflation number got smaller, it's just the amount it's increasing goes down. It still increases. So you're used to buying it at 100, it went to 110, and then it went to 115. Let's say inflation is only 3%. Well, now it's at 118 or 119. So it's still consistently going up off of a big number. What people, I think, in their head sometimes think, I need inflation to drop. What they're really wanting is deflation. They want that price to actually come back down to 100, which that ship has kind of sailed. And if we, as I explained before, if we do get into deflation, that is scary from an economic point of view. If we don't know how to get out of deflation. So we don't really, really want that. So you're kind of stuck at these high prices. You just don't want them to go up at such the fast rates as they were going up before.
What should the retail investor pay attention to in 2024?
I would watch the labor market. So right now, unemployment in the United States is low. It's at a reasonable rate. There have been some indicators that it's ticking up. People and some economists tend to point to the fact that the unemployment rate is low, and therefore we can't be in a recession. And in some ways they're right, but it's not the headline. We are not in a recession because the labor rates and unemployment is low is true. But that doesn't prevent recessions. If you look at the last 9 recessions, they all started with low unemployment rates. And because the rates rose is the definition of you going to recession. So almost by definition, you have to start at a low rate and start to see unemployment tick up and then get worse. So what I think is going to happen is you're going to see unemployment start to tick up. And employers in the United States, a survey came out recently of like how many employers are hiring right now. And that number came out to be 52%, which seems reasonable, but it's a relatively very low number. And when we hit that number of 52% of employers are actually looking for employees, that tends to be problematic for the employee market. And so you're probably going to start to see some tick up of unemployment. And when that happens, other employers say, oh my gosh, well, we might start getting unemployment. I need to start reducing my costs. And maybe I start laying off myself. So it becomes self-fulfilling and kind of it stacks upon itself. So I would look at the labor market as a signal to see whether we are actually headed into a recession kind of soon, and watch that closely.
What about the consumer price index?
Well, CPI, for sure, you want to look at CPI to see if you're seeing inflation, but that's going to, I mean, it's coming down. It's been consistently coming down. So you want to determine whether you're going to get a rebound. We've been concerned about the spike in inflation that we saw, and it's come down. It's mirroring what happened in the 70s. So you had a spike in inflation, and it came down, and then you had another spike higher than the first one. And it came down. And then you had a third spike that was higher than the second one. And that lasted 15 years, that kind of cyclical pain, until Volcker came in and just said, we're going to crash the economy and drive interest rates down. Our current chairman, Powell, is a student and calls Volcker the best economist we've ever seen in the United States. So he desperately does not want to have that same pattern repeat. And we're hearing rhetoric that this inflation is sticky. So he is going to be watching CPI, Consumer Price Index, to see whether inflation is continually coming down and that it doesn't have that rebound. He has to keep inflation up higher for longer. You've heard that phrase over and over again, higher for longer. He's been using this for 6 to 9 months now, because he's trying to kill any built up inflationary pressure that's in the system. He needs to squash that. And it needs to be, as much inflationary pressure was built up prior to where we're at this point in time, you need to have deflationary pressure on the other side of that. So that's why it's higher for longer. It needs to have that same amount of time where we had inflationary pressure where the federal fund rate was under the two-year. It needs to have it above the two-year for that same rate. So what you need to watch is the CPI staying low consistently and not rebounding up? Because if it rebounds up, that could be a big problem in that inflation was much more persistent than we thought. We are battling a bigger mountain. And maybe it is much more like the 70s and 80s, and this is going to be a multi-year thing and not just a couple-year thing.
So what if there's no job loss, but people are spending less because of the price of goods is too high? Wouldn't that cause a recession?
It could. Yeah, it could definitely contribute to that. So it's a waterfall. They spend less, and that's probably going to happen because their excessive savings rates have come down to almost zero. They're running out of, you know, their credit card debt is all-time high, over $1 trillion, and they're in default. So you're going to see the consumer slow down. Our market here in the United States is 70% consumer-driven. So if they're spending less, that's a problem for business. So if they spend less, what happens is this business aren't making as much money. They start laying off some people, and that becomes self-fulfilling. Then you have higher unemployment. They spend less. People lay off people. That's what happens in the recession is you get these things that work off of each other. So it looks good until it doesn't. There has never been a recession where people said, oh my God, we're about to head into a recession. It always looks like, oh, it's going to be a soft landing. It's always going to be okay. And then it isn't. It's always okay until it's not. And they say, well, oh, I guess we should have seen it coming. I'm saying we should probably see it coming because that's probably what's going to happen. You're going to tick up inflation. Employed people aren't going to be able to spend as much. They're running out of excess spending. They're running out of credit card room. They're defaulting on their debt. Companies will be making a little bit less money. You'll have to lay off some people, and that becomes a cycle.
All right. So any last words you would like to add for this year, 2023 and 2024?
Not sure. So again, it's the same thing. Well, it used to be all about the stock market, right? There was a phrase called TINA, T-I-N-A. There is no alternative, meaning the only place you could put money was in the stock market because it was the only place where you got decent returns. For a decade, we had basically zero interest rates. And if interest rates went up, that means bonds went down. So why would I want put money in bonds where I might make just under 1% or 1%, and then if something happens, I'm sure to lose money, or there's no other place to go, is why we put money in the stock market. But now that interest rates are higher, there's a viable option. Like, we were buying treasury bills, so the only investment I can use the word guaranteed return, because the U.S. Treasury was paying over 5% rate return. That's not a bad rate in a marketplace where we're unsure of if we think we're heading into a recession. So really look at bonds, diversifying. If you think interest rates are going lower, buying corporate bonds that are, let's say if I buy a Ford bond, I don't think Ford or General Motors is going out of business in the next 6 to 9 months, even if we have a recession. So if I were to buy a Ford or General Motors bond paying 6.5%, 7%, and interest rates drop, that bond price goes up. So not only getting 6.5%, 7%, but I also get appreciation on the bond. I could get equity-like returns by using fixed income. Quite the opposite of what we were at before. So I guess the answer is don't get pigeonholed into what you were doing before, because we're in a different environment now.
All right. Thanks, Stuart, for being here and doing this episode with me. I thought we were not going to make it, so we made it.
Yeah. Glad so, we were able to get it.
Yeah, me too. I didn't say the disclaimer before, but this is not financial advice. This is only for education purpose. So please do your own research before you make any decisions. Thank you, Stuart, once again for being here. And I hope everybody learned something from this episode. So my name is Richard L'Espérance. I go by the name of My Man Richard. This was the podcast Welcome to a Better Lifestyle, and I was with Stuart Cruz. And we'll see you on the next episode, everybody. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If this is your first time listening to the podcast and you like it, please don't forget to subscribe at the end. Thank you and see you next time.